Okay, we're in electrophilic aromatic substitution, which is chapter 14. So here's an example of a substitution, not maybe the most useful one in the world, but a simple one, where a deuterium replaces hydrogen by treating benzene with sulfuric acid. Now, what process do you remember with electrophiles and double bonds? An electrophile reacting with a double bond. So a very low LUMO reacting with a double bond. Can you remember any? Don? Can't hear. Well, it's true that low LUMOs react with double bonds in electrocyclic reactions, but there's a much more general reaction that involves that. I think somebody was saying it. Yeah, mercury, but mercury, the mercury cation is not the most general one. Remember, there are all sorts of things. H plus adds, then chloride, right? An addition, electrophilic addition to a double bond is where an electrophile and a nucleophile add. That doesn't happen with benzene, as you can see here, right? It's not addition that the electrophile accomplishes, it's substitution. It replaces a proton. So this is a very different kind of reaction. Now, you can do it again and again, and you can prepare perdeuterated benzene that way. Or you can use other electrophiles in place of the D+. For example, NO2+, Br+, HOSO2+, R+, RCO+. So there are lots of different ways that you can substitute for a hydrogen in a benzene ring and make a substituted aromatic compound. And it's a different kind of mechanism. It's an association followed by dissociation. It's not like nucleophilic substitution that we've talked about, where the new group comes in as the old group leaves. This one adds to give an intermediate, this particular intermediate here. And then, of course, it could lose the D plus again, but it can also lose the H plus and give the substituted product. So it's the ability of benzene to form this stable intermediate that makes the reaction different. When you add an electrophile H plus, say, to a normal double bond, you get a very reactive cation that very quickly reacts with something else. This is a much more stable situation, and it's observable. In fact, we observed that kind of cation in our last lecture. In electrophilic addition to alkenes, a nucleophile adds in the next step, but here it's easier to lose H plus because you can recover the aromatic stabilization, which you'd lose if you did an addition and got rid of one of the double bonds in the benzene ring. Okay, and here's where we saw it last time. Remember this, we actually could prepare this stable cation and observe its rearrangement in the NMR. The trick, incidentally, to being able to observe stable cations is to have nothing there that's either a nucleophile that could add to the positive carbon or a base that could pull a proton off and generate a double bond. So by using solvents that are very non-nucleophilic and very non-basic, then it's possible to have a cation that you can actually observe in solution, at least if it's a relatively stable cation. And in fact, fairly unstable cations have been observed that way. In fact, Professor Saunders in this department was one of the pioneers of observing cations and their rearrangements. Okay, so here's benzene. D plus comes on and we get this intermediate, the association, which is of course stable because it's conjugated. So the cation addition converts a pi ring, aromatic, to a pi chain. I mean, it's still a carbon ring, of course, but it's not a ring of conjugated pi orbitals, as we've discussed before. Okay, so if we looked at this simple Huckel molecular orbital program at what some of the orbitals look like, remember in benzene we have the ones we're familiar with there on the left for a ring, but on the right it's a chain because there's no overlap between the terminal carbons. So that orbital there, which has an energy of zero, the same energy as an isolated p orbital. Incidentally, why are you not surprised that this has the same energy as an isolated p orbital just by looking at it, the one on the right? Could anybody just look at that and say, oh, that has the same energy as an isolated p orbital, even though it has two nodes? Anybody see why? Derek?
Would the nodes be such that, I guess, the shape is just like a p
orbital? Well, the atomic orbitals are all p orbitals that it's made of. Right? But the overall shape is not has three p orbitals in there. Kathy?
There's no overlap.
Yeah, there's no overlap. So there's nothing to change the energy because there are nodes in those positions which would overlap with the orbitals we're looking at. So that one has zero of energy, the same energy as an isolated p orbital. And that's the orbital which, if you had five electrons in the pi system, you'd have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. If you had 5, that would be the singly occupied molecular orbital. And if you take that, as we talked about this before, if you put another electron in there, well, that's the locus then of where the odd electron is in that free radical. If you add another electron and make it an anion, then that would be where the negative charge is. And if you took the electrons out of that orbital, then you'd have a cation, and that would be the location of the positive charge, right? So the positive charge then is concentrated in these positions here, adjacent to where the adding group came in, and opposite it, but not in those other two positions. So that's where positive charge is. That's where this very low LUMO is. Okay, and we see the same thing, of course, here in drawing resonance structures for that chain intermediate. Okay, now let's look at how this substitution would work if we already had a group in the benzene that was not an H. Suppose you put one in and now you're going to put a second group in. And just for sake of argument, let's suppose it's NO2 that's going in. So NO2 plus is the low LUMO that's attacking the electrons of the pi ring. Now, where do you get NO2 plus? You get it from HONO2, nitric acid, and sulfuric acid. Now, how does that work? Well, we bring in a proton and protonate the nitric acid and then lose water. So we're left with NO2 plus. Okay? Now, NO2 plus is interesting because it's exactly the same as CO2 as far as the electrons are concerned. If you took CO2 and added a proton to this carbon nucleus, right, that would change the proton to nitrogen, right? But the same number of electrons, it now would be a cation if you added a proton. So the orbitals of NO2 plus are exactly the same as the orbitals of CO2, and this is the LUMO, right, which is big on this middle nitrogen, right? So that's the one then that comes and overlaps with the pi ring to put an NO2 group on after the proton has been lost, right? So the idea of electrophilic aromatic substitution is it comes on to a carbon, you have both H and the new group, then the H plus leaves and you're left with that new group. Okay, but of course if you already have a substituent in the ring, there are three different isomers you can get. And they're called ortho, meta, and para, respectively. Now, what effect does this X group have on how fast the reaction works? Well, how would you know? The best way, a really efficient way to tell, is to take a mixture of benzene and some other aromatic compound whose rates you're interested in. React it just a little bit with this reagent, and then see how much of the benzene reacted, how much of your compound reacted, and then you know the rate of your compound relative to the rate of benzene. Okay, so if you're going to do your experiment that way, it's reasonable then to take the relative rate of hydrogen, that is a reaction with benzene, to be 1. And then if you put an X group on, does it make it faster or slower? Do you get more product or less product when an X is on there compared to benzene? Okay, well, if you have a methyl group on there, you call that toluene, then you find that the nitration is 25 times faster. Okay? And if you have an OH group on there, the alcohol called phenol, then it's 1,000 times faster than benzene. Now, what does this tell you? Is this sensible that this should be faster? Well, yes, both of those groups are electron donating to the ring. The carbon by hyperconjugation, and also by being electron releasing compared to hydrogen. The OH by having an unshared, although it's electron withdrawing through the sigma system, its double bonds can overlap with the pi system and make the intermediate more stable, the cation or the starting material more reactive with a higher HOMO. So this electron donation eases the formation of the cation intermediates. We already know, you're not surprised in the case of methyl, because we know that more substituted cations are more stable, T-butyl compared to isopropyl compared to ethyl compared to methyl. Right? So it doesn't surprise you that a methyl group makes this reaction faster if you're forming a cation intermediate. On the other hand, we could look at the, there are three products, of course, and if we look at the intermediates on the way to those three products, which product you get is determined by which intermediate you get. Once you've gotten the intermediate, then the H plus falls off and you have the product. So whether you get the ortho, the meta, or the para product depends on which cation you form. And now if we look at these cations, these cation intermediates, you can see that there is positive charge or a very low LUMO, that LUMO that has an orbital here, here, and here. That LUMO is right next to X. Right? So if you have unshared pairs of electrons on X, they'll be stabilized by this LUMO, and that will be unusually stable. So we can get stability from these intermediates. Now, what happens if X is NO2? Then it turns out that the relative rate is 6 times 10 to the minus 8th. It hardly works at all. It's very difficult to nitrate once there's already a nitro group on there. In a sense, that's positive, because it means it's possible to prepare the mononitro compound. If it gets faster when you put the nitro group on, then the first product you make is going to go on and add another one and another one and so on. Right? So it's handy, actually, to have the first one make the next one slower. Okay, so NO2 makes it slower. Trimethyl ammonium, so a nitrogen that has a plus charge, also makes it slower. Right? Now, does that make sense to you? What effect would these things have on the Henry? Can't hear. They're electron withdrawing rather than electron donating. Right? So those are both sigma or pi, or both electron withdrawing. So that will retard the formation of these cation intermediates. Okay? And chlorine is just a little bit slowed down, right? 3% is fact. I mean, nothing compared to these 10 to the minus 8 things, but it's slower. Does that surprise you? Does it surprise you first that it's slower, and second, that it's not all that much slower? Hassan, what do you say?
No,
I can't hear. Can you speak up? Yeah, the chlorine is electron withdrawing. That makes it tough to get a cation next door. But it has the lone pairs that are able to interact with that low LUMO. So it has both good and bad. And it would have been difficult to predict which of its attitudes dominated. I wouldn't have been surprised if it had been a little faster because of the pi. But in fact, it turns out to be a little bit slower. Okay, so it's pi donation of electrons, but electron withdrawal of electrons. So this is the effect of the substituents on rate. But notice that we're getting three different products, right? So you could be interested in which isomer you get. Almost certainly, if you're doing this for preparative purposes, you want to get a particular compound. Okay, so let's look at the effect of these groups on the... I was going to say first why it is that NO2, which has an unshared pair of electrons on nitrogen, why is it electron withdrawing when OH is electron donating? You think of nitrogen having an unshared pair. And notice from what we said before that OH accelerates it by 1,000, nitro retards it by 10 to the 8th, or 10 to the 7th more like. Okay, so the OH has its a p orbital with unshared pair in it. So it can, if we look at the energy of the HOMO here, which is what's going to get attacked by the LUMO that's coming in, the electrophile, we see it has a certain energy in benzene, which is about the same as that of a p orbital on oxygen. So there's very good energy match between this and the HOMO that's going to get attacked, right? So they'll mix, and the HOMO will be much higher, right? And the reaction will be much faster. So there's a high HOMO, good overlap with phenyl, and therefore the reaction is much faster. OH is an electron donor. And also then, once you get a cation, once you get the LUMO next door, the unshared pair on oxygen will be very much stabilized, which is all to the good. Okay, now how about with nitro? Well, if you count up the electrons on nitro, on the nitro atoms, nitrogen has 5 electrons. It uses one here, one here, one here, and it has an unshared pair in the pi system. Okay? Oxygen has 2 unshared pairs in the sigma system and one here, which means it has 1 electron left. So the pi system is going to have 4 electrons, 2 from nitrogen and 1 from each oxygen. Now, what are those? So why doesn't the unshared pair on nitro do the same thing that the unshared pair on oxygen does? In fact, why is it not even better than oxygen? Because the unshared pair on N is higher than the unshared pair on O. So why isn't it better? Well, let's look at those pi electrons on the nitro group, noticing that it's allylic, right? 3 p orbitals in a row, 4 pi electrons, right? So the very lowest pi orbital, the lowest occupied pi orbital, is this one, which is big on nitrogen and small on the 2 oxygens. It's got good overlap with phenyl, but poor energy match. Remember the pi double bond, the HOMO you're interested in is way up here. It's not going to mix with this. So it has good overlap, but to no avail because the energy match is so bad. Well, how about this next orbital of the nitro group? That looks very good, but it has a node in the middle. So even though it has a very high HOMO, the same energy as a double bond, it doesn't mix with the double bond. So there's no overlap with the phenyl, right? So you can't profit from the electrons that are high energy in that orbital. Right? And the final orbital, which is a vacant one, remember there were 4 p electrons, the final one, so that one was willing but not able, right? The final one is big on nitrogen and small on the oxygens. That would be great. It's a low LUMO, good overlap with phenyl, but it's a pi acceptor, not a pi donor, because it's vacant orbital. So it's going to lower the energy of the electrons in the pi system, not make them more available for attack by the external electrophile. So nitro is electron withdrawing in the pi system, even though naively you might have expected a nitrogen with a higher unshared pair than oxygen to be more of an electron donor, but it's more of an electron acceptor because that orbital that could have been an electron donor has a node in the position where it could have done the donating. Okay, so that's the reason for this 10 to the 10th difference in rate between OH and nitro as existing substituents for the next substitution. Okay, now how about this question of ortho, meta, and para, the orientation of the new nitro group once you already have X there? Okay, so if the X is hydrogen, of course that's a silly case. It's 1 to 1 to 1. They're all the same. In fact, I suppose. Notice that there are two ortho positions and two meta positions, two meta positions to the pre-existing X. Two orthos to the pre-existing X, two metas, but only one para. So I suppose from one point of view you could say this is 2 to 2 to 1, right? But let's do it per hydrogen. Right, not take this statistical factor into account. Okay, now with methyl as the substituent, it's you get a lot of ortho and a lot of para product, but no meta product. Can anybody see why this might be? What's better about getting ortho and para product than getting meta product? Brian? Right. Only the ortho and the para have the positive charge where the X group is, not the meta. Right? So the methyl can help out if it's forming the ortho or the para intermediate, but not if it's forming the meta intermediate. At least it can't help out as much. Okay, so those are the products you get. Now, if you use T-butyl instead of methyl, now you get 72% of para, but very little ortho or meta. What's wrong with ortho in this case?
Yeah. Starkey groups.
Right. The T-butyl is really big. This would be very crowded if that were a T-butyl group. Okay, so we understand that. So those groups are activating. They make the reaction happen faster. Right? And they're also directing, right? They direct to the ortho and the para positions, although the T-butyl doesn't do a very good job of ortho directing because of its size. Okay. Now, if we look, and we saw why that was, the steric hindrance. Okay, so these are electron donating groups. Now, here's an electron withdrawing group because it has a positive charge and it's 10 to the minus 8th. And notice that it gives no ortho. That doesn't surprise you because it's as big as T-butyl, right? But it also gives very little para. It gives, to the extent that it gives a product, it gives mostly meta, right? More than 4 times as much as it does para. We can understand why it doesn't give this. Why doesn't it give this? Why doesn't it give para? Can anybody see? Nathan, what do you say?
It would be because the para position, the positive dipole is next to it, and
right.
It's also a meta. It would have to do with like having a positive dipole.
Yeah. Exactly. This is a positively charged group. If you're going to get the para, if you attack in the para position to the X, then that's where the positive charge is going to be in the ring or in the chain, right? So you don't want to get the two positives next to one another. Okay, so that's understandable. Nitro is the same deal, right? We just saw about nitro being electron withdrawing. It doesn't want to be near the positive charge. So it's slowed down everywhere, but it's most drastically slowed down ortho and para, not as much slowed down in the meta. So the reaction is slow. But to the extent it happens, or if you wait for it to happen, it'll be a meta product. So these substituents, the same thing is true of an ester group. right? Which is really slowed down in para, also slowed down in ortho, but not as much slowed down. It's twice as fast in meta as it is in ortho, right? So those are deactivating groups, electron withdrawing. They don't help you make the cation intermediate, right? And they're meta-directing. You get mostly meta-product from these groups. So this makes sense, because they're electron withdrawing. So this makes sense then in terms of these intermediates, that if you have electron donating groups, you get mostly ortho and para. If you have electron withdrawing groups, you get, it's much slower, and you get meta product. Okay. Now, here's chlorine. Notice that, again, it's an interesting case, right? It's certainly slowed down. We already saw that on the previous slide. Right, but to the extent it gives product, it gives ortho and para, not meta. Right, so it's deactivating, but it's ortho-para directing. So it's sort of schizophrenic. Right, it's like electron donating things with respect to which product you get, but it's like electron withdrawing things with respect to the rate. Does this surprise you? Renshi, do you have any ideas about this? So would you say chlorine is electron withdrawing? Or would you say electron donating? Okay, and what would you expect if it were electron withdrawing? You'd expect it to be slowed down? True. But you'd expect it to be meta-directing? False. What makes things meta-directing? Pardon me, ortho-para. What makes things ortho-para directing? Yeah, so is chlorine electron withdrawing or electron donating? It's both, right? It's electron withdrawing in the sigma system from the system as a whole. That makes it hard to form a cation. But if you're going to form a cation, at least form it in such a way that you can stabilize the unshared pair on the chlorine. Right? Okay, and that's what it's doing. So it's sigma deactivating, but ortho-para directing because of the pi. Okay? Now, if a reaction is slow, you can try to make it faster by making one of the reagents a better reagent. And a good example of that is halogenation. Suppose you want to make a halobenzene. So you start with benzene, and you want to do this reaction where Cl plus comes in and does the attacks that pi system, and then H plus comes off, and we have the substitution. Now, the trouble with that is that Cl plus isn't such an easy reagent to come by. Cl minus is much easier. Where do you get chlorine with a low vacant orbital, like Cl plus? Have you ever seen anybody use chlorine LUMO? Yeah. Victor? We have the bromonium ion or the chloronium ion, right? The three. What reagent generated that? That was as if, right, that when we reacted with an alkene, we put a Cl plus on, or Br plus. What reagent did you use to do that, to get the Cl plus or the Br plus? Yeah, what was the orbital that was the low orbital? You used Cl2, right, or Br2 to brominate an alkene, right? And what you got was as if Br plus or Cl plus added. But it wasn't Br plus or Cl plus that was the reagent. What was the reagent was Br2 or Cl2. I'm asking, what was the orbital? What was the low orbital?
Wasn't there a radical?
Well, that was possible, right? There was free radical chain halogenation that gave anti-Markovnikov. But I'm talking about the Markovnikov one, which is the one that went... Yeah. Evan? Yeah, it's a sigma star of Cl2. Okay? But it turns out that the Cl2 sigma star isn't reactive enough to react with benzene. It's reactive enough to react with a normal alkene, but it's not reactive enough if at the same time you're getting rid of the benzene's aromatic stabilization. Okay? So here's Cl2, but it doesn't work. Okay? But if you add what's called a Lewis acid catalyst, like AlCl3, notice that Al is right below boron in the periodic table, which you can't see over there. So like boron, it has an empty valence atomic orbital. There's a p orbital on aluminum that's vacant, a valence level orbital. So like boron, it's good at stabilizing electrons, right? So it can form a bond to Cl2. In fact, what you have is AlCl5. Okay? Now, if you look at if you compare the orbitals of AlCl5 to those of Cl2, this is the LUMO, right? So it's this is the one we talked about before with Cl2 attacking an alkene, right? So this antibonding between the chlorines, the alkenes, electrons come in, form a bond to the Cl, Cl minus leaves. So it's as if you were using Cl plus. Here we have much the same thing, except the boron or the aluminum is stabilizing that LUMO, making it more lower energy orbital, right? And if you look at the surface potentials, how happy a proton would be on the surface, you see that it's plus 29 here on this position of the chlorine, if you were going to attack that. But it's plus 38, right? Half again as stable if it were attacking here. So using this Lewis acid catalyst, the thing with the vacant orbital here, makes the chlorine more reactive and reactive enough to react with benzene. This one's okay for an alkene, but you need help to do benzene. So this is activating the electrophile in halogenation. Okay, and then of course when the Cl plus adds here and you get the cation intermediate, the leaving group is the AlCl4 minus. So you've made a good leaving group. Have you ever seen a trick like that before where you make a good leaving group on something to make it easy to... Pardon me? Yeah, protonating OH to make water leave. It's the same idea. Okay, another way to soup up the reaction would be to activate the nucleophile. Okay? And that you see in the case of the synthesis of salicylic acid by Kolbe in 1860. Do you remember the name of Kolbe? What did he do? Yeah, Henry? Right, he's the one that told Van't Hoff that he was stupid to talk about arrangement of atoms in space. Right? But here's something really... Most of the things that Kolbe did were... Most of the chemical things he did were good. I mean, he was not a very nice person, actually. He was very anti-Semitic, for one thing. But he did some good chemistry. And one thing he did was figure out how to make salicylic acid. So, you start with phenol. And do you remember what salicylic acid is? You dealt with it in lab. What do we need to substitute, Evan?
Oh, I thought you were asking what it was.
Yeah, I am.
It's aspirin.
No, it's aspirin, but what's the molecular structure of salicylic acid? Now, what you need, it's an acid. Right? Actually, this is an acid. Phenol is an acid. If you ever get it on your skin, you'll know it's an acid. It burns like heck. Because it's sort of organic, so it dissolves in the oils of your skin. But it's very acidic. Why is it acidic? Why is it not like any old alcohol?
Because
right. Once you lose a proton from this, the O minus is very strongly stabilized. Right. So the anion is a very stable one. Right. So its pKa is about 10. Right. Pretty strong acid. You'll know it if you get it on you sometime. Okay. But salicylic acid is not called an acid because it has OH on the ring. It's called an acid because it has carboxylic acid on the ring. So it has a carboxylic acid in this position in place of H. So what you need to do is replace this H by CO2 or CO2H. Okay? So we want this to attack CO2. Like that. Right? Now, we know that would work well if that were a nitro, NO2+. Right? We already looked at NO2+. And then remember, OH on the group made it 1,000, on the benzene ring, made it 1,000 times more reactive with NO2+. But the problem is that the orbitals here aren't nearly as low as in NO2+, where you've taken a proton, where you've added a proton, makes the orbitals much lower here, right? So the LUMOs here aren't low enough to do this, even with the OH there. You might say, oh, we have the unshared pair of the OH to help out, right? But it's not enough. Okay. Now, one way you could make CO2 more reactive is to increase its pressure. Right, just the law of mass action, or raise the temperature. So you can raise, you can do 100 atmospheres of it and 125 degrees. Still, it doesn't react. What Kolbe found was, if you put in base and pull the proton off, now you have a much higher energy orbital here, and now you've got more push from that higher MO, and now it works. Right, so this is activating the nucleophile by making it an anion rather than a neutral compound, and then you can get this. And as Evan said, this, if you acetylate that group, becomes aspirin. So this is how aspirin is made. It maybe helps solve the CO2 problem as well. So take a lot of aspirin and help out with the CO2 problem. Okay, now what would you expect for this compound, which is called aniline, aminobenzene, or benzene amine, it's sometimes called systematically. But if you have, if you had phenol here, OH, and you're going to have now NH2, is that going to make it better or worse? Yeah.
Wouldn't it be worse because those electrons are
out of the plane of the pi system? Oh no, these are actually in the plane of the pi system, and it's planar here. Right, it's not the nitrogen is not pyramidal; it's planar. In order to have those overlap with the vacant orbitals of the benzene ring, so indeed, these electrons do this kind of thing and help out. Now they're not quite as good as if it were O minus, but they're much better than HO. Right, the electrons on nitrogen are higher in energy than those on the oxygen because the nuclear charge isn't as big. So that looks like it would be good, right? And how about, okay, we got this push to help out. And how about if instead of CO2, we use NO2+, right, a really reactive one. It turns out that this is a self-igniting rocket fuel, right? You don't need to, if you mix them, you got an explosion. In fact, I have a little story about this. There's a very good friend of mine named Dennis Tanner who taught for many years at the University of Alberta, but he was a graduate student at Colorado and then at Stanford. And when he was at Stanford, he's a very hard worker, and he was working in the lab on the 4th of July, and there were not many people working in lab on the 4th of July. But those who were got together and decided that they should have a little fun too. So they were each going to put on a display out in the parking lot. And he had heard that aniline and nitric acid is a rocket fuel. So his display was to show this. So he got a beaker with aniline and a separatory funnel with nitric acid in it, and a ring stand, and he got out in the parking lot and leaned over, and the idea is you turn the stopcock on the separatory funnel and then you run. So he turned the stopcock thing on the separatory funnel and started to run, but he didn't realize how very quickly this reaction would start. There was this enormous fireball which burned off his eyebrows. They grew back, but Dennis learned very quickly that this is indeed a very, very reactive substitution. Okay, so that's a really hot one. Okay, but what would happen if you, instead of have aniline, have acetanilate, as this is called, acetylate the nitrogen. How would that affect the rate of the reaction? Help it or hurt it? Yeah.
That would hurt it because
the pi star of the CO stabilizes these electrons. So you no longer have so much of a push. Right? So you lower that HOMO, and now this reaction becomes controllable, and you don't have to run when you turn the stopcock, and your eyebrows will not be burned off. Okay? So the acetylation of aniline makes its nitration controllable. Right? So if you ever want to nitrate aniline, first acetylate it, okay? Now, Friedel Crafts alkylation is well done in the book. I started to take some pictures to show this, but I didn't have time. I'll try to incorporate them in the PowerPoint on the web. But okay, so here you see. Let me just zoom in a bit. This is not as good, I think, as. This section 14.5 is Friedel Crafts alkylation. The name comes from Charles Friedel, who was a French chemist, and his student James Mason Crafts, who was an American. In fact, he became the first president of MIT. But they were trying, as it explains here in the book, to do other things. But what they found was that when they did it, they got substitution of an alkyl group on the benzene. Now, you can't do it this way, right? Here you have a high HOMO. You might imagine that you could do a SN2 reaction, displace bromide, but it's not reactive enough. Okay? So what you do is make this one more reactive. Now, how can you make bromine better as a leaving group? How do you make OH better as a leaving group? How do you make halogen better as a leaving group? Anybody ever hear of that concept? Making a halogen a better leaving group? Was anyone here 8 minutes ago? What did we use to make halogen a better leaving group? A Lewis acid catalyst, like AlCl3 or FeBr3. So as we turn the page here, we see how to do it, right? And then you can put this, then you can substitute an alkyl cation for the hydrogen of benzene. Okay, and here's how it happens, right? It comes on, gives the same kind of thing we were talking about before. Now this, so that leaving group, AlBr4, minus comes off, and you get the substitution. Now, there could be a problem with this. You might not get what you expected to get. Like here, the attempt was to put on an N-propyl group. So you have chloride, you help it leave with AlCl3, right? And in fact, you get that product, but only 45% yield. 55% of it is isopropyl instead of N-propyl. What went wrong? How did you get from N-propyl to isopropyl? Brian? If you get the cation, the primary cation, it can do a hydride shift and rearrange. So this we see here. So here where the AlCl3 is taking the chloride off, right, generating this cation, but a hydride can shift and therefore generate the rearranged substituent on the benzene ring as well as the primary. So some of it works, but some of it rearranges. So it's not all one or all the other, okay? What the rate, it was about 50-50, right? Yeah, 55-45. Okay, now, what can you do about that if you don't want the rearrangement, if you want to make a long chain? In fact, most of the detergents that you buy are a benzene ring that has a long chain alkane on it that makes it dissolve organic things, right? And then it also has on the benzene ring an acid group that makes it dissolve in water. So it helps make the fats dissolve in water, which is what cleans your clothes or your skin or whatever. Okay, so you want to be able to put long chains on, not just branched chains. So that's where you get section 14.6, which is Friedel-Crafts acylation, right? So it's much the same idea. The group you put on, you have a long alkyl chain here, but it started as a carboxylic acid, and we know how to make acid chlorides from, well, we don't know that. We know how to make alcohols into chlorides using, for example, SOCl2. You can do the same thing in this case. We'll talk more about that later. Okay, but anyhow, you get an acid chloride. So now instead of using an alkyl chloride, which would rearrange, you use the acyl chloride, right? Do exactly the same thing, make the chloride a leaving group, right? And now you get an acylium ion. But this cation is stable. It won't rearrange. You won't have hydride shifts to that one. That seems at first glance a little nuts, because the oxygen should be electron withdrawing compared to having other carbons on there. You'd think that would make the carbon cation unhappy to have an oxygen attached to it. What's wrong with that line of reasoning? How is it that the oxygen helps out the cation instead of hurting it? Mike? Right, the lone pairs on oxygen give this resonance structure. Get stabilized, okay? So the acyl cation will not rearrange in a Friedel-Crafts reaction. And that means, and there'll be an example here, like this one, right? Here's that a butyl chain, four carbons, but now it's an acyl chloride. You use AlCl3 to make it into a cation. It does a substitution for proton and gives this without having done any rearrangement. But you have a carbonyl group. You don't have the CH2, which may have been what you wanted, right? So the question is, can you go from here to here? Can you change the carbonyl group into CH2? Now, this is properly a subject for the next chapter we're going to study, which is carbonyl groups. But because it's so relevant to acylation and its applications, the book decides to mention it here, that there are actually two classical ways to do this. There are many others as well. But zinc amalgam dissolved in mercury and hydrochloric acid does the trick, changes carbonyl to CH2, right here, 93% yield. But that's done in strong acid. Suppose the rest of the things in your molecule aren't happy with strong acids around, right? Then you can use a hydrazine and strong base, 200 degrees. That's not for wimps, right? And that changes this one into CH2. Right, so you can do either strong acid or strong base. But the point of mentioning it here is that it shows the utility of Friedel-Crafts acylation as compared to alkylation. What is that utility? Alkylation gives rearrangement. Acylation doesn't. So if you can put the acyl unrearranged thing on and then change the carbonyl group into CH2, it's as if you did an alkyl without rearrangement. So that's the trick of that. Okay, then diazotization. This is a way of changing one group into another. Now, the book summarizes here a number of different ways you can change benzene rings. And they point out that although there's not a way to put NH2 on, if that's what you want, you can put nitro on, as we've talked about ad nauseum. And then there are different ways of changing a nitro group into an amine group. And again, this is something that involves reduction, oxidation reduction, that we're going to talk about in the next chapter. But the point is that you can not only put on the halogens, SO3H, Friedel-Crafts alkylation, Friedel-Crafts acylation, and nitro, you can also come out with NH2. Now, if you have NH2, then there's something. Then the sky's the limit as to what you can put on, because once you have NH2, you can change it into N2+. Now, usually you don't want these diazonium compounds, right? But N2 is a fabulous leaving group. Okay, so it's easy then to replace it with many other things. Here we see. We'll pick up at this point next time.